Hi, I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. On today's show, can you believe a nearly 200-year-old medical device is still being used every day by doctors to listen to the heart and lungs? We look at the stethoscope and find out why it's being phased out by new technology that can not only hear, but see inside the human body.
But first, as parents, we want to see our children live up to their full potential. We pay for lessons, sports clinics, tutoring, all to support growth and learning. But what if your child was diagnosed with a condition that stunted their abilities, and for them to be normal, all it took was a pill? This scenario describes why ADHD diagnoses and prescriptions have exploded over the past two decades. ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and ADD, attention deficit disorder, have become familiar terms to doctors, parents, teachers, and children. In fact, according to recent data from the CDC, 15% of high school-age students are diagnosed with the condition.
But the rise in diagnoses of ADHD and ADD worries many health professionals who feel the condition is overdiagnosed. They argue that too many children are taking prescription drugs that are potentially harmful, drugs whose benefits have been oversold to doctors and the general public, and whose risks have been minimized or ignored. New York Times reporter Alan Schwartz looked into the controversy. His article, The Selling of ADD, was published in The Times in December 2013. Welcome to Take Care, Alan. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
According to the CDC, 11% of school-aged children have been diagnosed with ADHD, nearly one in five high school boys. There's been a steady rise in the last 20 years. So what is your take on why this is happening?
Oh, there are so many factors, some, you know, benign, some perhaps less. I think that we've started to appreciate just how much trouble these kids were having. Kids with extraordinarily low attention spans, impulsivity, hyperactivity. I mean, these kids have been known for a long time, but a lot of them were dismissed. A lot of them were dismissed as bad kids or uncontrollable kids, and they were left behind in the, you know, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. But in the 60s and 70s, there was a greater appreciation for how medicine could assist them in becoming far more functional members of their educational communities, their schools. And then in the 80s and 90s, it became even more popular. And then in the late 90s and 2000s, because of very good formulations of medication and relatively safe formulations, it became very easy to say, hey, my kid has a short attention span. My kid is very hard to control. Perhaps some Ritalin or Adderall will get him or her, usually him, to calm down, make his teacher's life less insane, make life at home less insane. And isn't that a good thing? I think that a lot of people are concerned, though, that we're kind of pathologizing childhood in too many cases. We're taking what is relatively normal, now perhaps annoying and perhaps above average, but nonetheless, relatively normal behavior, and medicating it as if it were a condition bad enough to warrant that medication. I think a lot of people are concerned, as you said, that, you know, one in seven children by the time they turn 18 has been told by a medical provider that they have a chronic brain disorder. And the question is whether that's correct and whether that's what we want for the next generation of Americans.
And things have changed, talking about teachers and the classroom. Many schools have really chopped down the amount of playtime kids have, gym time and creative time, in favor of more academic time. So you have a structured day and you have less of an outlet for a lot of that energy. And now there's all the pressure with testing and everything we know that goes along with that. So you have to wonder, societally, have our expectations changed? How much do you think is driven by what's going on in the classroom and just that it's easier all around to have kids that can really sit down and pay attention, not to mention the things that kids are playing with nowadays, a lot of electronics. That makes it even harder when you don't have access to what you're used to playing with to sit still in a classroom setting.
You know, the factor, there are so many factors. It's all over the place. I think that there's no question that one of the things that doesn't get talked about a lot is that the human brain has been around for, I don't know how many, tens of thousands of years. Okay? Only in the past 100, and some would even say 70 or 80, have we asked all of the young brains to sit still and listen to an adult talk about social studies or math or poetry. The human brain was not designed to do that, or certainly not all human brains were designed to do that. However, for, you know, pretty good reasons, we are asking all of our kids to participate in what we consider the best educational system. Now, the other option would be to say, look, if you're hyperactive, just go to trade school, you know? Well, is that fair? You know, what we're trying to do is give every kid an opportunity. Well, what that would require then is for the most hyperactive and impulsive and inattentive to be brought under the umbrella of everybody else. And in order to make that easier, quelling their traits that will always be sort of interpreted as disruptive is necessary. And so, yes, are we sort of medicating these kids in order to fit in with the others? Yeah, but that isn't necessarily an evil thing. It just depends on how it's applied and how many kids to whom.
All right. So let's talk about how that's applied, because, you know, we all think we know what ADD is and what ADHD is. Would you just briefly go over the two and how they differ and how a diagnosis is made? I mean, where does the concern come from? The parent, the teacher, the school?
Well, real quick, the distinction between ADD and ADHD is incredibly fine. And frankly, the psychiatric community has done a really rotten job in handling the naming of the disorder. ADHD is marked by traits in the following three categories: inattentiveness, impulsivity, and hyperactivity. Okay? If you don't have hyperactive symptoms, which are generally found more in boys than anybody else, then you can still have ADHD, but it's the inattentive type. It's not ADD. It's still ADHD, but not hyperactive. It's really silly, okay? So there's really no difference between the two.
Well, I'm wondering, because obviously at some point somebody evaluates the child and says, hey, they're beyond the range of normal. And, of course, it sounds like Normal is a flexible term. So who, where is the push coming from? Is it coming from the school psychologist, the parents? Because obviously—
It's everywhere. It's
the
everywhere.
Child has
sometimes
to show up in a doctor's office before they get the diagnosis, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's sometimes it's the parent, sometimes it's the teacher, sometimes it's both. I mean, that those are, you know, by far the two primary information sources that go into sort of the hopper of deciding whether the child qualifies for a diagnosis or not. I mean, you don't have ADHD or not have ADHD. The question is that whether your symptoms and behaviors are severe enough to meet the criteria for what we not unreasonably call the disorder. And so, you know, sometimes it's the parent who just feels like the child's behavior is keeping them back worse than they can deal with. Sometimes it's the teacher telling the parent, your kid is just, you know, out of control at school and too disruptive, and we think that an evaluation might be in order. In many states, it is illegal for a teacher to mention ADHD, because there's been an awful lot of pressure at times from teachers to get kids medicated, evaluated and medicated. Now it's more of a wink-wink at this point. And this, of course, doesn't speak to all teachers. I love teachers. You know, vast majority of them are wonderful. But unfortunately, there have been some who have placed pressure on parents to get their kids calmed down. Because, hey, look, the teacher's evaluation can be affected by kids distracting the other kids. And let's face it, the test score issue is a pretty big one these days. And if a kid going crazy is – and crazy, I just mean hyperactive and whatnot. I don't mean to insult anybody. you know, if a kid is being incredibly disruptive, it's going to lower the classroom's test scores. And these are real pressures felt by very well-meaning teachers. Now, I think there are other factors. The fact that parents are in the home less than they used to be, and obviously that has to do with working mothers. And this is not misogynistic in any way, but let's face it, there's just less time for children to be with their parents, and they're left to other folks and their electronics more often. And these are all societally systemic things that have contributed to the situation. But certainly, I think by far the most important one is our expectations on children have gone up. Some would say that's raising standards, but as you raise standards, there are going to be some kids who can't meet them. The question is whether they have a chronic brain disorder.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lohan.
We're talking to Alan Schwartz, who has done extensive reporting for the New York Times on the increase of prescriptions and diagnoses of ADHD in children. Let's talk about some of these drugs that are being prescribed so we can address and introduce the role of the drug companies and how they play into educating doctors, parents, how they market to children. What are some of the drugs that are just, we don't have to get into a lot of detail, but what are some of the more popular drugs that are being prescribed? And then talk a little about the role of the pharmaceutical industry.
Sure. The most recognizable name is, of course, Ritalin, which was the primary medication available until 1994 when Adderall came in. Now, those two different things, Ritalin has sort of spawned other things called Concerta and Focalin. Adderall has led to other amphetamine formulations like Vyvanse. They're all pretty much the same, just bodies react to them differently.
So the assumption is that there is a brain chemistry thing going on in these kids that doesn't allow them to pay attention. And if they take this medication, it will not change who they are, but allow who they are to really come through. Is that really it?
That's how some people phrase it. Some people phrase it a little less generously. But I think that depending on how you use that description, it can be fair. I mean, basically, it can slow the world down for these kids, allow them to take in information better, allow them to get along with either their teachers or their classmates or their parents. Just it calms things down for everybody, and that may allow the teaching of other skills to come through. That is the optimal scenario for when medication is prescribed because it can be temporary. You can calm things down. Kid can learn some new skills and perhaps not need medication going forward.
But the pharmaceuticals were very good about phrasing it in a way that when it went to the sort of direct marketing to consumers, you know, I'm a mother and I've had one child, you know, diagnosed with this disorder and the medication ads, they're very skillful about saying, as Lorraine had pointed out, you know, to let your child's strengths come through. I was particularly struck by one ad which showed a child dressed in a monster costume sitting on a bench, but he had his mask off, the headpiece was off, and he's smiling. And basically the copy says something about, you know, underneath there's a sweet child. And for anybody who's dealt with a child or a teenager who's a little bit on the edge sometimes, you believe that. There's a sweet kid underneath, and these drugs lead you to believe that that person will be freed and released and realize their full potential. That was to me, a very disturbing ad.
Yeah, I mean, what parent doesn't think their kid can be a monster from time to time? And what parent, you know, knows that there's a wonderful child underneath that monster? So selling – they really – the pharmaceutical companies really prey upon mothers' fears and concerns. You know, there's a reason why the ads appear in Family Circle and People and Good Housekeeping and things like that. The mothers are the most concerned, and the mothers probably see the behaviors more than others. And if you can convince a mother or certainly entice a mother to think that, hey, a pill will allow the wonderful kid you know is there – come through, That's pretty tempting stuff. We all want the best for our kids. Now,
so you're saying that in your studies, you believe that, that this direct appeal to consumers led to a higher number of diagnoses of the disorders?
Well, I don't think that pharmaceutical companies spend tens of millions of dollars on ads that do not work.
But I think we should mention that doctors write the prescriptions. So there were some people in this field at the time, 20-some-odd years ago and more, that truly believed that this medication could be helpful and was necessary. But somehow, with all the parties that we're talking about, parents that were concerned, pharmaceutical companies that did benefit by the profit of these drugs, the parents and the teachers were seeing an incredible increase. But the doctor, of course, is the one writing the prescription. So where are their thoughts now that it's being so widely prescribed? What is the research and what is the doctor's point of view in all of this?
Well, I think that it's fair to say that there are still, you know, if it's 15% of American kids graduate high school or leave high school having been diagnosed at some point, some of those are absolutely real. And they have real problems. And we should not forget that, you know, I don't know what the percentage is. It's probably not 15. But we need to make sure that we take care of the ones who are absolutely real and cannot be left behind. The question is how far have we overshot this thing? Doctors in general and medical providers in general are very loyal to their patients, and they don't want to think that they can't, that their help, their perceived help for their patient is somehow inappropriate. Very few doctors will, or nurse practitioners who prescribe or whoever it may be, will ever admit that any of their cases were misdiagnosed. Somebody is misdiagnosing a lot of these kids, but no one seems to be willing to admit it. And there's a huge resistance on the part of the medical community to accept that individually they feel like they've helped a lot of people, but collectively they have left a virtual generation of imminent adults thinking they have a chronic brain disorder. Now, if that's what we want as a society, hey, God bless us. That's not for me to say. But an awful lot of medical people insist that, you know, 5 to 8% of kids have ADHD. 5 to 8% of kids have ADHD, and so many of them are being missed out there. And hey, that may be true, but then why are 15% of children being diagnosed? I mean, it's twice as many as it should be, which means more than half the time they're getting it wrong. No one seems to be making them accountable to that.
And it's a conversation we could have for a much longer period of time, but we're going to have to wrap it up here. New York Times reporter Alan Schwartz's article, The Selling of ADD, was published in December 2013. Thank you so much for your time.
It's my pleasure.
For more information on ADD and ADHD and Alan Schwartz's article, visit the Take Care webpage at WRVO.org. If you've missed a past interview or you'd like to hear one again, podcasts of our show are also available at our website and on iTunes.
Coming up, an iconic medical device is about to get a makeover that'll bring it out of the 19th century and into the 21st. Find out what that is next. You're listening to Take Care on WRVO Public Media.